Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, of course I want to speak about the very important historic election for president that is taking place in another 2 weeks now. We've spent the past 6 years trying to expose Barack Hussein Obama, warning about the danger he poses to the survival of America and Israel. And now more than ever, we see this danger. If God forbid he's reelected to a second term and never has to face the voters again, as we've said over and over again this year, it will be a real catastrophe. And so we're doing everything we can to try to influence the outcome of the election. And it reminds me, really, of the 1980 election between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Our great Shlomo just did a video on that, on the similarities between Jimmy Carter and Barack Hussein Obama. The election in 1980 was a turning point election. I don't know what would have happened if, God forbid, Jimmy Carter had won that election, and he could have won the election if there hadn't been that final debate a week before Election Day, when the two candidates were in a tie in the polls. They were both tied in the polls. It was very close at that time. And then Ronald Reagan won the final debate so decisively that he wound up winning the election by a landslide. But if that hadn't happened, and if Jimmy Carter had been reelected, I can't begin to imagine how the world would look today. It would be a very different world. And I don't know what would have happened to Israel and the Jewish people, because Jimmy Carter was determined in a second term to do what Barack Hussein Obama is determined to do in a second term, pressure little Israel to commit national suicide. Ronald Reagan did not do that during most of his term. He also did some things that were bad when it comes to Israel. But most of his term, he ignored Israel. He ignored the Middle East. And that is good for the Jewish people and good for Israel, because that means no American pressure on Israel to commit suicide. And that's what we hope to get out of Mitt Romney. I hope Mitt Romney ignores Israel and doesn't pressure Israel during the time he's in the White House, if God willing, he's elected. And so this is another crucial turning point election, where Iran is on the verge of developing nuclear bombs, and Barack Hussein Obama again is speaking about negotiations with Ahmadinejad and the Iranians. That's the latest thing today. That again, the United States is begging Iran to enter into negotiations after the election is over. They're going to be negotiating while Iran is months away from developing nuclear bombs. I mean, this is such an obvious farce. And then you have, of course, Obama's commitment to the Muslim world to work relentlessly and obsessively to get Israel to go back to the pre-1967 borders, to get Israel to establish a so-called Palestine state, to get Israel to commit suicide, God forbid, and the tremendous danger involved there. And Obama's policies in the United States, turning America into a socialist European-style nightmare, another Greece, where we'll face the prospect of national bankruptcy and a collapse of all of our major institutions, where we have more than $1 trillion in debt or in annual budget deficits and over $16 trillion in national debt. And Barack Hussein Obama keeps adding record-breaking amounts of debt every year and plans to add much more with Obamacare and with the other socialist crazy programs that he intends to institute as president if he's reelected. It's the end of health care as a quality health care system in the United States, with quality medicine in the United States. That's over with Obamacare. We're going to be moving to a socialized medical system where the quality of medicine and the quality of health insurance and the quality of hospitals and the quality of research all go downhill. And all the social issues. This is the same Obama that now is pushing for gay marriage, which will certainly lead to the destruction of Western civilization. God destroys empires and nations who engage in this type of sinful behavior. It is unacceptable to God, and I don't care if it's popular or unpopular to say it. God destroys nations that engage in this type of abominable behavior. Abortion on demand, murdering tens of millions of babies, gay marriage, legalizing all the illegal aliens by executive fiat, by presidential executive order now, not even bothering with legislation, opening up America's borders to a third world invasion, and a massive transfer of wealth to the laziest people in society. That's the future under Barack Hussein Obama in a second term. And I don't think Mitt Romney's perfect by any means. But the things I've just described would not be happening, certainly not to the same degree, under a Romney administration, in my opinion. And so this is a critical turning point, a very important election. It's what we've been warning about for six whole years. And now it's coming to a head in the next 2 weeks. I hope that people took seriously all of our warnings all these years. I hope that people understand the incredible serious nature of what's coming. Because I don't think there's much of a future for America, and I think Israel's going to be in a lot of trouble too. Real trouble, existential trouble, in a second Obama presidency, God forbid. Tomorrow night we have the final debate. I'm doing this program less than 24 hours before the final debate, the Monday night debate, which will take place on Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And that final debate is supposed to focus on foreign policy, which has not been Mitt Romney's strongest debating point, even though I actually think foreign policy is perhaps the area where Obama is the greatest threat. Because in a second term, he doesn't need Congress. A president has tremendous foreign policy power. He could create catastrophe all over the globe in a second term. And he doesn't give a damn about the voters or about anything else that would stand in his way at that point. That's an unbelievably dangerous situation. But we've seen in the debates that Mitt Romney didn't fare as well in foreign policy, so we better do some heavy-duty praying. We better pray to Hashem, to God, that he help Mitt Romney in that debate tomorrow night, because it's the last debate. And the latest polls show that the race is quite close. The latest Wall Street Journal, NBC News, Marist poll shows Obama with 47% and Romney with 47%, tied. An exact tie, each with 47%. That's the latest poll. Just came out today. The Gallup poll shows Romney ahead by 7%. The Rasmussen poll shows Romney ahead by 2%. But the Investors Business Daily poll, which is a Republican newspaper, they've been doing a poll, a tracking poll, and that shows Obama ahead by 6%. So, you know, I don't know. Take whatever poll you want. Obviously, we hope that the polls that show Romney winning are correct, obviously, but who knows? In the states, state by state, it looks like Obama has an edge in the Electoral College. So this is a close election, but it's a tough election for us. Obama is leading among early voters. Obama early voters are coming out in bigger numbers than Romney early voters. But Democrats usually do stronger among early voters. The same thing happened 4 years ago. Blacks vote in unusually heavy numbers when there's early voting. And labor union people and other Democrat voting constituency groups. So you can look at it that way. You can say, oh, look, among early voters, Obama's leading. So you could look at it any way you want. You can look at it optimistically, pessimistically. The election is quite uncertain. That's the bottom line. Some polls show Romney ahead. Some polls show Obama ahead. Some polls show that it's dead even, like the latest NBC Washington Post poll. There's a lot of uncertainty. My guess is that it's close right now. The election is close right now. I don't know what it's going to be like after tomorrow night's debate, but right now it looks close to me. And so we have to do everything we can to make a difference here. And so once again, now more than ever, I'm appealing to you. When we put out videos, help us with those videos. Help us on YouTube and help us on Facebook with English videos and with Hebrew videos. Please like, favorite, comment, and mirror the videos. We don't have a lot of time left. Let's try to influence things. And we need your financial support. We need your financial support to do whatever we can before the election, and we need your financial support because we're going to be essential after the election, no matter who wins. JTF is going to be more important than ever after the election. If Romney wins, we're going to be important because we're going to try to influence what happens under a Romney administration. And we're going to try to influence Israel to do what has to be done now to take out that Iranian nuclear threat. We have to work fast and move quickly if Romney wins. We don't have a lot of time. God willing that Romney should win. If Obama wins, then we're in a lot of trouble. And JTF is also just as important as ever, more important than ever. Because we got to resist Obama's horrible, dangerous, deadly policies. And so we need your financial support. We need your financial support so that we can make a difference and reach people. We have the best videos on the internet with our pathetic, meager little budget. We put out videos that are better than political campaigns that have hundreds of millions of dollars. Romney is going to be spending about $1 billion in this campaign. Obama is going to be spending roughly $1 billion. It's going to be about $1 billion versus $1 billion. Billion would be. Billion is 1,000 millions. And I can assure you that our videos are better than the Romney campaign videos or than the Obama campaign videos with our meager budget. If anything ever proved that JTF is the organization worthy of support and worthy of spreading the word and doing everything we can to make a difference, our high-quality video should prove that. Because if only we reach enough people, we could wake people up and we could change things dramatically. If people wake up, we can build a big movement, we can change the world. We've got to do that. We've got to do everything we can with what we've got. And so we need your help financially. That's why I again thank the wonderful JTFers who go on a regular basis to the English main page. JTF.org is the English main page. And there's a donate button on the top of our main page. This is not our forum main page. This is our website main page, JTF.org. There's a donate button on top, and people can click on it, and with their credit cards, in two or three minutes, they can make a contribution through their credit card automatically to help us. Or they can go to the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and do the same thing. There's a donate button on the top there as well. Or they could send through regular mail, checks, money orders, and cash donations to our post office box. God bless the great JTFers who have been doing this generously on a regular basis. God bless you. Without you, we couldn't do anything that we've done. And we've done quite a bit. We've done a tremendous amount with the limited resources we have. Tremendous. We've reached over 1.5 million people with our video, over 1.5 million views with our videos on YouTube. We have thousands of videos up there. In English and in Hebrew. Bringing a message that no one else will bring to the American people or to the people of Israel. We're not allowed to be silent in the face of injustice. We're not allowed to sit back when terrible things are happening. We have to tell the truth and we have to speak truth. And we have to fight for justice and pursue justice and challenge injustice. That's what we're in this world for. And that's what JTF does, and does it very well with those videos. The only tragedy is that we don't have the big budget we need. If we could reach everybody, if we had a big budget, we could reach everybody in Israel at least. And what a different world, what a better world this would be if we could. But with what we've got, we're still making a difference. We're reaching a lot of young Jews in Judea and Samaria. And we're reaching Jews with a message in Israel that they would never hear anywhere else to build up a more realistic view of what Israel must do in the future. That's very important, vitally important. and we're fighting in this campaign to make a difference. If it's a really close election, like some of the polls show right now, again, the latest NBC Wall Street Journal poll says it's going to be a tie. If it really is that close on election day, JTF, with our thousands of videos and our 1.5 million views on YouTube, could potentially make a difference. What if only a few thousand votes separate the candidates in Ohio, where the race looks like almost a tie now, or in Florida or in Virginia or other states where the race looks close? What if it's really close? You don't think if a few thousand votes separate the two candidates, which is what happened in 2000? In 2000 was only a few hundred votes. Or in 2004, it was tens of thousands of votes. You don't think in a situation like that, if we have 1.5 million views with very convincing videos and very strong, powerful, and persuasive videos, you don't think it's possible that we could make the difference? Of course it's possible. And so we got to try and we got to fight. We got to do everything we can. We got to do everything we can until Election Day. And then after Election Day, we got to do everything we can. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, because that's our job and our challenge in this world. And so I thank those of you who have been helping us. Please, we need your help now more than ever. We need you to help us with the videos. We need your financial support, and we need your prayers. Let's pray for Mitt Romney to win the debate tomorrow night. Let's pray for Mitt Romney also to win the election on November 6th. And please pray for JTF's success and for the success of our Hebrew movement, Hayamin Hamiti. We need your prayers. And this is a critical time. So let's make sure to all get involved now, because the moment the truth is going to be at hand for us in the next 2 weeks. All right. Anyway, God bless our great JTFers. And now we're going to go to our great questions. And we start with Lolas, who is new to the JTF forum. I see there are no posts, but there's a question this week. Welcome to the forum, Lolas. Lolas writes, quote, "What are your views on Croatia and Serbia in the past century?" Unquote. Okay. First of all, I'm a Jew, Lolas. The Croats were Nazis in World War II, and they murdered 90,000 of my brothers and sisters in the Holocaust. They ran concentration camps. They were aligned with Nazi Germany. And they brutally murdered 90,000 Jewish men, women, and children. They also murdered well over 1 million innocent Serb men, women, and children. So the Croats are Jew killers. That's a matter of history. They were on the wrong side of both world wars, World War I and World War II, and they have been a force for evil in the world. Serbia, on the other hand, played the opposite role. The Serbs fought on the right side in World War I and in World War II and were allies of the United States and fought against the Nazis. The Serbs did not murder or persecute Jews in Yugoslavia. On the contrary, the Serbs told the Jews, come and fight with us, come in the mountains and fight with us. And the Jews that went and joined them survived. Most of the Jews who fought with the Serbs against the Nazis survived. The Serbs didn't hurt the Jews. They fought together with the Jews against the Nazis. And so, of course, as a Jew and as a moral person and as someone who believes in God, I have to support the Serbs. I have a moral obligation to support the Serbs, because they have been a force for good in Europe, and the Croats have been a force for evil. That's what I think of Croatia and Serbia in the past century. Thank you for your question. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of common sense and reason and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim. 1. Requirement for the mohel is metzitsa. Can you clarify what that is and what the appropriate method should be?" Unquote. First of all, Dr. Dan, we are required to have a brit milah. We are required to circumcise our male babies. 8 days after their birth, we're required to circumcise them, and we have a ceremony called brit milah, where we enter them into the covenant with God, and we circumcise them as the Bible commands, as the Torah commands. But metzitsa, which just means squeezing the, just gently squeezing the blood out of the wound, is not required by halacha. I'm telling you, it is not required. You are, you know, it's not one of the things in the halacha that's required. Now, there's certain rabbis later who said that they think, because of tradition and everything else, that it's now become part of the tradition. But in the actual original commandments, it was not part of the original commandments. That's number one. Number two, when you say metzitsa, when we speak about metzitsa, there's the metzitsa that is commonly used, which is just using a glass tube, a sterilized glass tube, or a sterilized sponge to clean the blood away, and to slightly squeeze some of the blood out of the wounded area. And a sterilized glass tube is used, or a sterilized sponge. Now, that is very common. That's a very common practice. But the other type of metzitsa, which is called metzitsa bepeh, where orally the mohel actually puts his mouth there and removes the blood with his mouth, that is not common. That is rarely used by only a small minority of Jews. Only a small minority of Jews engage in that practice, usually certain Hasidic groups and Haredi groups. Certain Hasidic and Haredi groups do that. And it is not common. It is not commonly used. The vast majority of Jews do not do that when they have their milah, when they have the brit milah. The part that most Jews do use, which is metzitsa, not with a mouth, but metzitsa with a sterilized glass tube or a sterilized sponge, which is something Jews have been using for hundreds of years, most Jews have used for hundreds of years, that is not controversial. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing unsanitary about that. There's nothing wrong with that. But the use, the attempt to orally clean the blood as a tradition among certain Hasidic and Haredi groups, that is controversial. And only a small minority of Jews do that. And only a small minority of Jews traditionally have done that. Traditionally, the vast majority of Jews never did that. So let's just make sure that we understand that distinction here. There is a small minority that does the very controversial system of orally removing the blood with their mouths. And they feel very strongly about defending that practice. And, you know, I can say as a fact that is not required halachically, because the vast majority of Orthodox Jews do not do that with their babies. So it is not required halachically. But it is a minhag, it's a tradition among some of the Hasidic and the Haredi Jews. Again, only a small minority. And that's the difference. Now you're asking me what the appropriate method is. I think that any method that is sanitary and that follows Torah tradition is appropriate. As long as it's in accordance with the Torah, and as long as it's sanitary and good for the baby, I think anything is fine. As long as it's according to halacha. Halacha is Jewish law, and follows what the Torah commands us to do, I think it's fine. Anything that does do that. The controversial method that the small minority use, where they orally remove the blood, I could tell you that if God willing I have a son, I would not want that done with my son. That's just my own personal view. I would not want my son to have it done that way. I would want them to use the sterilized glass tube or the sterilized sponge if they're going to do metzitsa at all. Anyway, thank you very much, Dr. Dan, for the question. And I'm glad, I hope we were able to clarify that. And now we go to the great Yimach Shmo to Obama, who writes, and I quote, "Why are so many Jews self-hating?" Unquote. That's a great question, Yimach Shmo to Obama. And I think the reason is because the Jews are a small minority who were so hated and so despised and so victimized by anti-Semitism for thousands of years. The Jews were accused of every possible thing under the sun. And the Jews went through inquisitions and crusades and pogroms and holocausts and expulsions and rapes and mass murders of the worst type. I don't think there's a people on the face of the earth that suffered that level of systematic international persecution, hatred, like we see with the Jews. I'll give you just an example of the level of anti-Semitism that exists. The United Nations. Do you know that 60 or 70% of the resolutions passed by the United Nations General Assembly are against Israel, a country of only 5.5 million Jews? 5.5 million Jews, tiny little speck on the map, and 60 or 70% of the resolutions passed in the United Nations General Assembly. 60 or 70% of the resolutions are against Israel, this little country. And who's passing the resolutions? All these brutal, vile, mass murdering, butchering, barbaric, primitive dictatorships from the third world. That's the majority of nations in the UN, and they're passing these resolutions condemning little Israel, which is the most humane, moral, decent country in the world, and which is also the one country that God said belongs to a certain people forever, as in part of an eternal covenant in the Bible. So the Jews, after experiencing all of this, Yimach Shmo, this made a lot of Jews crazy. And so a lot of Jews began to think, well, if the whole world hates us, maybe there's some good reason for it. Maybe, you know, maybe the world is right. And so they started to adopt anti-Semitic views against their own people. And some of them also take the view, if I can't beat them, join them. Maybe if I maybe if I'm also against my own people, maybe they'll accept me. Is that evil? Yes. Being a self-hating Jew is evil. Turning against your own people is evil. But we see a lot of Jews have done that. But that is because it's a reaction to the massive hatred and contempt that the world has had for many Jews. That's one reason. And a second reason is because there are many Jews who just don't want to follow the laws of the Bible and the laws of the Torah, and they hate the laws of the Bible, and they hate God, and they hate the Torah, and they hate what God commands them to do. They don't want to be bothered with that. They want to do what they want to do. That's the Hollywood Jews, the news media Jews, the billionaire decadent Jews. And they have many followers among the Jewish people, just as many Gentiles are like that too. We see many Gentiles who want to behave like that too. They don't want anybody telling them what to do, and they don't want to live by any morals. And we see it among the Jewish people, though. When we see it among the Jews, we're more shocked, because the Jews are supposed to be, we judge the Jews by a higher standard because they're the people of the Bible. But I would say those are two of the main reasons. One is a reaction to the fact that the whole world is always against the Jews, and the Jews start, after a while, start believing maybe this is true. Maybe we really are so terrible the way that all the anti-Semites say. And the second reason, again, is because there are many Jews who hate Judaism and hate what it stands for, because they don't want to have to do what God commands them to do. They want to live life the way they want to live it. Anyway, I hope that explains it to a certain degree, Yimach Shmo to Obama. And thank you for the question. And now we go to the great Meir Kat, who, by the way, is now active on our Hebrew forum as well. Meir Kat writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, should a country with lots of Jews attempt a German-style Holocaust, God forbid, would the Israeli establishment flex its nuclear muscle?" Unquote. Of course not, Meir Kat. Of course not. The Israeli establishment was the state of Israel was created by God. But the establishment that took control of the institutions in the Jewish state the establishment there, is evil. These are people who enabled the first Holocaust, who undermined every effort to rescue the 6 million Jews during the first Holocaust. We read this in the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht and Child of a Century by Ben Hecht. And we see it through many other authoritative sources that they worked to undermine saving Jews during the Holocaust. They also undermined our campaign in the Jewish Defense League to save Soviet Jews. We're not talking about using nuclear bombs here. We're not talking about that even. We're just talking about just a protest campaign to demand that the Soviets open their doors to free Soviet Jews. That they didn't want to do. That they were against. They did everything to undermine us. They seized Rabbi Meir Kahane's passport in Israel, wouldn't let him come to America to protest against the Soviets, when Soviet dictator Leonid Brezhnev was coming here for an important visit in 1973, Rabbi Kahane wanted to come to America and organize protests. Fortunately, he had a crazy 16-year-old Jew named Chaim Ben Pesach who went and bombed Soviet diplomatic cars anyway. We gave the Soviets a bloody nose during that visit anyway. I blew up two of their cars in Maryland. We attacked their office in Washington, D.C., and we gave them a rough ride when they were here. If they thought they could bury the issue of Soviet Jewry because Rabbi Kahane was being held like a prisoner in Israel and not allowed to come to America to protest, they were mistaken. But the fact is that the Israeli establishment has already proven that they will allow Holocaust to take place against the Jewish people. They betrayed the Jewish people during the Holocaust, during the Nazi Holocaust. They're betraying the Jews of Israel by selling us out to the Arab Muslim Nazis that want to perpetrate a Holocaust in Israel. They betrayed Soviet Jews. So, you know, we know that they can't be trusted to defend Jews even when Jews are facing a Holocaust. Which is why, Merkat, we have to wake the Jewish people up and replace them and throw them out and replace them with good and loyal Jews. Anyway, thank you, Merkat. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "In 3 weeks we have an election." Actually, LKZ, you wrote this earlier. By the time I'm doing the show, it's now 2 weeks. But anyway, okay. LKZ writes, and I quote, "Can you highlight this forum's achievements in helping the GOP, and do we have an October surprise of our own?" Unquote. Well, I don't know if we have any October surprise. I hope we can come up with one. Maybe we'll do a video that's so great that I don't know. I don't know of any October surprise that we have. I wish we could come up with one. If we had enough money, we could. I think I highlighted the achievements in my opening. I think the fact that we've uploaded many, many videos. Hundreds of thousands, we have 1.5 million views on YouTube, approximately. I mean, I often give you, you know, videos, some of the best videos, you know, that we have, some of the high, like we have one that has almost 90,000 views now, another that has 83,000 views. I mean, I give you some examples, I've given some examples and even uploaded some examples on the forum of videos where we have a lot of views. And since there are, you know, since we have thousands, several thousand videos up there, there's no question. A lot of people, for a country the size of Israel, certainly have seen our videos. And in terms of the election here in the United States, hundreds of thousands of voters have seen our videos. So again, LKZ, if the election is close, we could make a difference. That could be decisive if the election is close. You never know. You never know. What if only a few thousand votes separate the candidates in one of the key states that decides the election, that tips the election one way or the other? In a situation like that, with hundreds of thousands of views, we could make the difference. It's possible. Anyway, thank you very much, LKZ. And by the way, LKZ, not only do we have videos up there, not only do we have large numbers of videos up on YouTube, but our videos, again, as I repeat every week, and I'm going to repeat it every week, and JTF should be very proud of it, our videos are the best on the internet. Our videos really are the best. Anyway, thank you so much, LKZ. And now we go to the great Brennan fan who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, are governmental policies that determine public state aid on the basis of number of children one has. An example of Genesis 1:28 in action. Brennan fan, you got me stuck here. What is Genesis 1:28? What's in Genesis 1:28? Now you got me stuck here. I got to check what Genesis... You're assuming that... I don't read these questions in advance, or at least this week I didn't read them in advance, Brennan fan. So I don't know what Genesis 1:28 is. I'm putting it in Google, and I'm going to try to check it out. We'll see if I can get it in time. I don't want to spend too much time looking. Be fruitful and multiply. Is that what we're talking about? Be fruitful and multiply? I think that's what we're talking about. Yeah. Okay, so it's be fruitful and multiply. Okay. So it's the very first commandment in the Bible. Be fruitful and multiply. Determining government policies. I think that in Israel, we should have government policies that encourage Jews to have a lot of babies. I can tell you that we should do that, and I think that that is part of Genesis 1:28. We should have those policies, and we should have policies, as far as the Arabs are concerned, our Arab enemies in Israel, we should have policies that get them out of Israel altogether so we won't have to worry about them being in Israel. But I think that in a situation like Israel, we should have policies that actually encourage Israeli Jews to have babies. Now, in the United States, it's a little more complicated because there are only certain groups that I would like to see have babies in the United States, Brennan Fan. I'd like to see right-wing evangelical Christians who support Israel. I want to see them have a whole lot of babies. But, of course, there are certain evil groups of people that I don't want to see have a lot of babies. So in the United States, it would be more difficult to implement policies like that. But public and state aid on the basis of the number of children you have obviously is intended to influence the birth rate, if that's your question. It is intended to influence that. Anyway, thank you very much, Brennan fan. I hope I answered your question. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Will there be a riot if Odumba loses?" I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so, but you never know. You never know. You're dealing with uncivilized people. You're dealing with barbarians. And so anything is possible. And now Confederate Kahanist writes, "Please educate young Americans. If Obongo wins, they will be facing early retirement. Thanks and God bless." Unquote. Confederate Kahanist, I think early retirement is an understatement. I think we're facing bankruptcy. Obama's policies are moving America toward bankruptcy. We are spending at the same rate that Greece was spending at before Greece faced bankruptcy. This country cannot sustain $1 trillion annual budget deficits. We have $16 trillion in national debt. The total national debt is over $16 trillion. We're adding to it more than $1 trillion in annual budget deficits every year. By the end of Obama's second term, we're going to have $21 or $22 trillion in debt. That is insane. We cannot continue to do that. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all the government programs and the government itself are all going to face bankruptcy. Obama is pushing the country over the cliff. This is just insanity. People have no idea. They are so ignorant. They have no idea how insane this is to even think about putting this individual in the White House to begin with and for a second term when he never has to face the voters again. This is the consequences of his policies will be horrific. Horrific. I don't know what type of country people think this is going to be under Obama. People are so crazy and so brainwashed and so pathetically illogical that it's beyond all words. And I know that I'm not supposed to speak like this in politics. You're supposed to have a happy face and supposed to be positive and supposed to be nice all the time. It's very hard for me to be nice when people are so damn stupid. I'm sorry. But the fact that they elected Obama to begin with is a very, very sad commentary on this country. I mean, how they could elect someone with a name like Barack Hussein Obama, with his history, his Muslim history, his communist history, his anti-American history, his anti-Semitic history. How the majority of the Americans can vote for something like that. And now even, and now after he's done all these terrible things in his first term, consider re-electing him is just beyond my understanding. Beyond my comprehension how people could be so insane. I'm sorry, Confederate Kahanist. I know it's a politically incorrect answer I've given you, but I just don't know how else to answer it. I just don't know what else to say. I am astounded at how illogical and crazy people could be. And there's no excuse. No excuse. Because even though the regular news media, the ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, they all lie, people don't have to go to them. People have an internet. People have, there are numerous organizations and sites that have warned about Obama's policies. And yes, the talk show hosts on Fox and talk radio have been warning about it correctly. I mean, there is no excuse. There is no excuse for this level of stupidity and insanity. No excuse. So, what can I say, Confederate Kahanist? I hope and pray that we're able to stop this train wreck in another 2 weeks. If not, God forbid, we just have to resist and do the best we can. But it's going to be a very rough ride. Anyway, thank you very much, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to the great Selhar, who is very active, of course, also on our Hebrew forum. And Selhar writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about Lance Armstrong? And has the USDA been conducting a just procedure in their investigation against him? Unquote. Selhar, I think he is guilty of using drugs and of making drugs available to other athletes, and I think it's terrible. Because it sets a bad example for other people. There's nothing worse than a public figure who influences people to do bad things. That is the worst possible thing that anybody can do. To be a public figure and to misuse your position to influence people to do wrong. I think that's a terrible thing. Do I think their investigation against him has been a just procedure? I think they've been too lenient on him. I think someone who uses drugs and disgraces athletes and creates this situation where there's immorality and decadence. I'm sorry. I don't have sympathy for somebody who engages in that type of behavior. He could have been a role model. He could have been a role model for someone who recovered from cancer and did great things. And that's what he should have tried to do. Even if he didn't win, even if he came in second, or even if he didn't do as much as he did without the drugs, it would have been better to do it honestly than to do what he's done. Better not to achieve so much, but to do it honestly. That's my opinion. Anyway, thank you, Selhar. And now the great Tag Mechir Tzedek writes, and I quote, Shalom, what is your opinion and thoughts about M.K. Rav Chaim Amsalem, unquote. I don't like him, Tag Mechir. I think he's an opportunist. He was elected with Shas. He was supposed to be a Shasnik. He was supposed to be loyal to the Haredim. Then he stabbed them in the back. He tried to tell people to accept Giur that was not the Alpi Halacha. What is Giur? Conversion. In other words, conversion to Judaism. That's not strictly according to the Jewish law in order to make it easier for people to convert. And that's bad. And I'll tell you why that's bad. There are some people who want to, there are some Gentiles who come to Israel, and because Israel has a higher standard of living, they want to convert so they could stay there. Certain Russian Gentiles, Sudanese, others, they want to stay in Israel because of the higher standard of living, not because they're interested in being Jews. They couldn't care less about Judaism and don't believe in Judaism. Those people should not be allowed to convert. Only people who sincerely want to become Jews should be allowed to convert. And so to create a procedure where they can convert more easily by just joining the army and being drafted in the army is terrible. Because it puts, first of all, it creates phony Jews who are being passed off as Jewish. And secondly, it puts like a stain on the people who do go through the sincere people who convert, who are wonderful people. We have wonderful people who convert to Judaism, who are the most magnificent, who become the most magnificent Jews, who are great people. And everybody looks with suspicion when these types of things happen. Everybody looks with suspicion on everybody who converted. Oh, maybe they didn't go through the full procedure, because it's known that, you know, that you have these quickie type of conversions. So it creates suspicion as to everybody who converts when you do that, which is terrible. And he was willing to go along with that in order to suck up to the left-wing news media. And so I don't like him. I don't like him. I think he's a phony. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go to the Great British Sword, who writes, and I quote, "Blessings to you, Chaim. If Romney wins Be'ezrat Hashem, what do we call Jews against Obama headquarters?" Unquote. That's a good question, British Sword. Obviously, we've got to replace it with something. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. And now British Sword writes, too, "How much divine intervention was in the debate?" Unquote. I don't know exactly, British Sword. But I think there was some, because it was pretty amazing how, in the first debate at least, we're talking about the first debate, I think Mitt Romney did very, very well. And I think Barack Hussein Obama did so poorly. I don't know. I was just stunned that Obama did that poorly in the first debate. So who knows? I mean, God may have intervened to make that possible, to make Obama overconfident, make him lazy so that he didn't study as much as he should have and didn't become as aggressive as he should have, and as the people who were preparing him for the debate were also overconfident. You know, that could be the hand of God. That could be the hand of God. Anyway, thank you very much, British Sword. And now we go to the Great Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "If there is an afterlife and righteous people go to God and are happy forever, then why should people want a long life in this world?" Unquote. What a great, profound, philosophic question, Ruby Stars. And it's the type of great question that of course, is raised in the Talmud. Questions like this are raised all the time in the Talmud. An excellent, excellent philosophical question, Ruby Stars. And the answer is, people who are really righteous and are with God do indeed have a happier existence in the next world than the existence we have in this world. That is true. But they personally may be more happy and may personally be enjoying themselves more. But idealistically, an idealist, Ruby Stars, who's filled with love for their fellow human beings and for the world, they want, even if they have to suffer, they want to live a long life because they want to help others, because they want to make this a better world. When the righteous leave this world, it's bad for this world. When the righteous aren't with us, that there's less righteousness in the world. And so for idealistic reasons, to help others, they still want to stay in this world and live a long life. Live as long a life as possible. That's one reason. A second reason to answer your question as to why they would want a long life if the next world, the spiritual world, is even better, which it is, for righteous people it is. But the second reason why they would want to live a long life in this world is because, according to the Jewish faith, the more you accomplish in this world, the more reward you get in the next world. So even for themselves, I know this, in a way, sounds like it contradicts the first answer, but, you know, there's some truth to both, even though sometimes there are contradictions in life, Ruby Stars. And the second answer sounds like a contradiction of the first, where the first is they're living for idealistic reasons, even though it's supposedly against their interests. The second answer, but in reality, it's actually in their interests, because If you live a longer life and you accomplish more and you do more good, you get more reward for your good deeds. The more good you do, the more you work to correct the world and improve the world and help others, the more good that you do in the world, Ruby Stars, the more reward there is in the next world. That's at least the Jewish belief. People are judged on Yom Hadin. Yom Hadin means the day of judgment. Midah keneged midah, which means measure for measure. Every measure, every good thing we do, we're judged for, and every bad thing we do, we're judged for. Everything. It's true that God tempers his justice with mercy. That's true. But still, we are judged by our deeds, according to Jewish belief. Anyway, thank you very much, Ruby Stars. Great question. And now we go to the great Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, "What is your feeling of Michael Oren giving up his American citizenship to become ambassador for Israel? What do you think of his politics?" Unquote. I think Michael Oren is a disgusting, horrible person who I did a video on him in Hebrew where a couple of years ago I did a video on him because he kept issuing these statements that Barack Hussein Obama is so pro-Israel. And he's the best friend Israel's ever had, and he's so pro-Israel. He's in love with Barack Hussein Obama. He's a horrible, disgusting person. I wish he would give up his citizenship of Israel and move to Saudi Arabia. Anyway, I can't stand him, Imaknik. You know what I think of Obama Jews. And this is someone who becomes an ambassador for Israel and spends his time telling Jews that Obama's a wonderful friend of Israel? What a disgusting person. Just disgusting. Anyway, thank you, Imaknik. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on Oliver Stone's son's conversion to Islam?" Unquote. Well, it certainly doesn't surprise me because the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Oliver Stone was an evil, sick, disgusting, vile, anti-American, left-wing, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel piece of filth. And so his son is following in his footsteps. It really doesn't surprise me. It really doesn't surprise me. Like father, like son. And they'll both wind up in the same place. God willing, it should only come sooner rather than later. Anyway, thank you very much. Say No to Islam. And now, Robert One writes, Robert One, I could see, is new to our forum. Welcome to our forum, Robert. Robert writes, and I quote, "What else do people do on JTF?" Unquote. I'm not sure exactly what you mean, Robert, in your question, but if you're asking what people do when they're not on the forum, I'm going to assume that's what you're asking, if that's what you mean. Obviously, people work for a living, and obviously some people are married and have families and do all other types of things that everybody else does. But they also want to try to make this a better world. They care about the world, and they want to make this a better place. They want to make the world a better place, and they feel a responsibility also to speak out and to be active and to try to stand up for justice. So they devote some time to that as well, and sometimes they devote time and money and want to make sacrifices in order to try to make this a better place and a better world, to live for an idealistic purpose. But when they're not on the forum, our JTFers they go to work or they go to school, and they do everything that they do the things that other people do. Anyway, thank you very much, Robert. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Why do you think the UK odds maker Ladbrokes still has BHO as a heavy favorite, 4-11 versus 2-1 for Romney, despite the polls being very close?" Unquote. Because the odds, EB22, are based upon what most bettors feel is going to happen, where most bettors put their money, as you know. And people who are betting their money do think that Obama's going to win. Now, I hope they're wrong, obviously, and they're not always right, but they think people who are putting their money down, most of them do believe that Obama's going to win. I think they probably think that way because of the Electoral College, because Obama does seem to have a slight advantage in the Electoral College. I think that that's probably the reason. EB, we just better hope and pray that the bettors are wrong. But in all the major betting, it's not just the UK odds makers. I mean, all as far as I know, all the major bettors are betting, are giving the odds to Obama, as far as I know. Let's hope they're wrong. Anyway, thank you, EB22. And now we go to the great Israeli heart, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of..." And we have Eurovision from 1979. Okay. The Israelis appearing at the Eurovision. Well, I think Israeli heart that Israel is a nation with tremendously talented people. The Jews are an incredibly talented people. I mean, the Jews are 1.5% of the U.S. population, and they're probably 30 or 40% of Hollywood. And among the directors and producers in Hollywood, they may be 60 or 70%, or at least one time they were. And yes, the Jews in Hollywood are the worst of the Jewish people, but the Jews are just such an incredibly talented, brilliant people. God gave them this tremendous talent and brilliance, which they're supposed to use for good. Israel, at one time, did have a culture where they sang nice songs and people seemed to be clean cut and seemed to sing nice songs, and they had beautiful music. I remember Israeli music from the 60s and 70s, and some of it was very good. Very, very talented and very extremely creative. And now, like everywhere else in the world, things are deteriorating and going downhill because morals are going downhill. And so in Israel, we see that morals have been going downhill since then. And now you see Israelis with rap, and you see Israelis doing all the same type of decadence and degeneracy that we see in America. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But Israeli heart, we've got to work to bring back the moral fiber of Israel and the true morals and the moral values in Israel. We've got to work to bring that back so that Israel will set an example for the world and become a light unto the nations, which is what the destiny of the Jewish people is supposed to be. Anyway, thank you, Israeli heart. And now we go to the great Chai, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, a Dvar Torah, on anything you want to talk about, please. I love them. Thank you." Okay. Let's see. Oh, why don't we speak about the... We could speak about this week's parasha, Parashat Lech Lecha. Parashat Lech Lecha. Parasha means the Torah portion that we read this week. Parashat Lech Lecha is the parasha where we're finally introduced to Avraham Avinu and the beginning of the Jewish people, the beginnings of a Jewish people. Avraham Avinu is Abraham, our father. According to Harambam, Maimonides, Avraham, the first Jew, the world's first Jew and the founder of the Jewish people, faced a total of 10 tests in life. And according to Harambam, the very first test was when God said, "Go to a land, get up and go to a land that I will show you, that you don't know about, that I will show you a new land." And so you got to leave your family and all the things that you have. And he had a very, you know, he was a teacher and a leader and had extensive family, some of whom were idolaters. In Kastim, Ur Kastim is where he lived. And he had to leave all of that and go to a land that God didn't even tell him. It was eventually, we find out that it's the land of Israel, but at first God didn't even tell him where he's going. Just an uncertain thing. Just get up and get ready to go and start moving. Lech Lecha. Get up and go. And he immediately went and immediately did what God told him to do and obeyed God. It was the first of his 10 tests, according to Harambam. The number 10, by the way, is an interesting number. There were 10 generations from Adam Harishon, from Adam, until Noah. Noah being the Noah of the flood, the time of Hamabul, the flood. 10 generations. And then there were 10 generations from Noah until Avraham Avinu, until Abraham, the founder of the Jewish people. And, and we find that God has certain purposes in creating different eras in history. And the era of the Jewish people was the beginning of something that we hadn't seen before. God intended for the Jewish people, through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to be separate from the other nations, so that they could be a light unto the nations, and a holy nation, and a nation of priests. In other words, set an example so that the other nations could see that God exists, and see that God decides their destiny as well. And this could only happen if they lived in the land of Israel, and if they were willing to follow God's commandments. The uncertainty, though, and the hostility that Avraham Avinu would face in this new land he was going to, this new unknown land. What is so important about this? Why is it so important that God told him he was doing so much good where he was? Why is God telling him, get up and leave Brooklyn, and get up and leave Los Angeles, and get up and leave Paris and Montreal and London, and go to Eretz Yisrael, go to the land of Israel? Why does God say this? Hakuzari, one of the great rabbinic commentators, tells us that the land of Israel, for the Jew, has a special atmosphere. Just like plants can only grow in certain climates. There are certain plants that can only grow in a warm climate. If you put it in a cold climate, the plant will die. If you put certain plants that can only grow in a cold climate, in a warm or tropic climate, the plant will die. There are certain plants that can only grow and flourish in a certain climate. The Jew can only grow and flourish in the land of Israel. There is something about the land of Israel that brings out the best in the Jewish people, that enables the Jew to become spiritual, and in fact, prophecy for the Jewish people is only in the land of Israel. Almost only in the land of Israel. And so there's something about the land of Israel that is essential to the Jewish people. And if the Jews don't go back, they're not fulfilling their destiny and the whole world suffers. But when the Jews are in the land, and when they liberate the land, and when they win against their enemies, and when they set an example for the whole world, or at least the righteous, all the righteous Gentiles in the world are blessed as well. All the righteous among the nations are also blessed, when the Jews are in their land and doing what God commands them to do. And so Abraham had to set that example, and he had to get up and he had to go to a land that he knew nothing about, with residents in the land who were hostile, when he was not a nation yet, and really believe that someday from him would come forth a nation that would redeem that land and build that land and become the people of the Bible, and become the people that would become a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. Avraham believed when God said that would happen. And of course, eventually it happened. And it's still happening. And it'll continue to happen until the final redemption. Anyway, thank you very much, Chai. And I want to thank everybody else for the questions and for everything else we're doing. And thank you for all of your help and for participating so that we can try to make a difference and so that we can try to make this a better world. Until next week, Shalom.